Blog Talk Radio.
Technical acumen to be putting the matches together with that kind of speed. So it's nice to see that he is also being thrown in there with people towards the mid-upper card of the division, like Cameron Grimes being the champion. He did take a clean loss, but it was a hard-fought match. And I think it was a nice little change of pace to have the babyface this time come out on top, anticipating the fact that the heels at ringside are probably going to try and attack you after the match. So I think that was a good job there, because too many times we see stupid babyfaces, and this time there was no stupid baby face. Instead, he was able to go into Saturday with the advantage of not just being champion, but of getting the one-up on the mind games of, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. Oh, and who do I think is going to win? I think that at this point, because of how they're setting up Solo Sikoa, I'm thinking it's going to be Cameron Grimes retains, because everything has been between Grimes and Sikoa. He hasn't really gone after Hayes. He hasn't really talked to Hayes that much. So I'm going to say that it's going to be Sikoa versus Grimes coming out of In Your House. And either Sikoa is going to end up becoming the next North American champion, or he's going to lose that feud, and that's going to be his send-off for next team.
I'm 100% in agreement with you there on who's going to be coming out of or what's going to be happening coming out of In Your House. I definitely think Cameron Grimes is going to be retaining. The way that they're setting up Solo Sikoa, just as you said, is basically like textbook kind of booking for them. But it's a little bit foreshadowing of what's to come. And I know I, for one, am looking forward to Solo Sikoa and Grimes. I'm kind of hoping it's still like a respectful, match where it's just kind of like two people seeing if they can kind of go at it and bring the best out of one another, because they both kind of are situated as babyface, but it could be used as a turning point. I mean, potentially for Sikoa. I don't want to see him go heel, but I could maybe see them, maybe like testing the waters with it, especially if he is, bound for the bloodline, which, everybody winds up talking about. Maybe they would want to test the waters, see how he responds as a heel, if that is the plan for him. I was pumped with this match. I really did enjoy it. And I think, like I said, I think it's going to do a lot of the good things for Nathan Frazier. I think it's going to do a lot of good things for Cameron Grimes going in Your House. So with that, I will say I did something stupid to start the show. If you're listening to the show recorded, you would have heard my terrible intro and us trying to bring Sean on to the show. And then Sean wasn't there. That's because I forgot to unmute our mics, and the people listening live weren't able to hear me. So it wasn't that Sean wasn't there. He was. He's the one that actually DM'd me to let me know I'm an idiot. He didn't say that, but I'm saying it.
Kelly probably said that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Kelly's not even listening, but something in the back of his head just went, Nate's an idiot. So with that, let's backtrack a little bit. As we said, we're going to be hosting a VIP roundtable after In Your House, and I am going to quickly kind of deviate from format. We're going to go right to go to the caller portion of the show. And I am going to bring on our co-host for the VIP roundtable after In Your House, Sean Covington from MMA Torch. Sean, how are you tonight, man?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, you actually didn't mute me and you muted yourself. I heard muted.
Yeah.
And I went, oh man, I should have said something, but I didn't want to be rude. I was pretty sure that was what would happen though.
Hey, no worries, man. No worries. I think that is what happened. Well, basically, when I log into the switchboard, I need to hit the unmute button on us, and I forgot to do that to kick the show off. So, is what it is there. But Sean, looking forward to talking with you on Saturday about In Your House. So, what do you have for us tonight? Any talking points that you want to talk about? Coming out of this show and going into Saturday.
Diamond Mind. Lots of stuff going on there. They're the thing that sticks out the most, because they all turned, except Roderick Strong. he's struggling to be a leader, not really doing a good job at it with, like, I kind of get it. Like, I like what they're playing out and how they're playing it out and everyone involved. I forget that librarian gimmick, whoever has that, but, like, she's doing a good job.
Kiana James.
Yeah, like, it's working. It's working. All their segments work, too, which I feel like they shouldn't. But every time Diamond Mine's on TV, it feels like a show that I can watch, that I can follow. It's cohesive. It's not too gimmicky. So coming away from this, I want to see Diamond Mine. I wish there was someone more prominent that they were feuding with, you know. Maybe if they were feuding with Legado now, that would be great, because then, you know, we would have true baby faces, true heels. And Roderick Strong, he's probably going to end up getting kicked out of the group and released by WWE, one way or the other. That's my takeaway from this, is that Diamond Mine is the most cohesive thing on the show, and they were able to turn them, and all of them have a lot of charisma. It doesn't really seem like it all the time, because they have to work together in their segment so much, but I just really like Diamond Mine. That's my biggest takeaway. And a lot of people are really bad actors on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So before we touch on that, let me actually read an email that's kind of right in this wheelhouse with Diamond Mine, and it comes from our good buddy JB in Detroit. He says, do you think the constant shuffling of members within Diamond Mine has hurt any of the main members that they seem to be trying to get over, such as the Creed brothers and Ivy Nile? He says he won't mention Damon Kemp because he's new to the faction, and with the connection of being the older brother to WWE's big investment, Gable Stevenson, or Stevenson, I think he's a lot safer. So far in the faction, we've brought in and taken out Malcolm Bivens, Tyler Rust, and Hideo Suzuki. I think if NXT was doing its best to get the Creeds and Nile over, they would have done everything they could have to go out of their way to keep Bivens happy. He's a universally agreed upon wonderful mouthpiece, and he would be a great promo mentor for the aforementioned Diamond Mine prospects. Love the show and go VIP. So the email does kind of tie into what we're talking about with Diamond Mine. I definitely think, like, the fact that we've had almost the entire group is essentially turned over at this point, because, I mean, the original Diamond Mine, if I'm not mistaken, was Tyler Rust, Malcolm Bivens, Hideo Suzuki, and Roderick Strong. Roddy's the only one left standing. Granted, it did happen in the NWO where everybody moved around really, you know, eventually, but if, you know, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Hulk Hogan eventually, like, they just kind of broke off as quick as Diamond Mine broke off. They would not have really amounted to anything. I think it certainly hurt them that there were just so many kind of people, like a revolving door. Sean, to kind of some of your points, like, I agree with you too, that it does seem like they're going to be breaking Diamond Mine up pretty soon, especially with Roderick Strong throwing in that caveat for the NXT tag team title match at In Your House, that if the Creed brothers can't bring home the titles, which Kiana James says that they've got a 12% chance of winning, if they can't bring home the titles, they're not going to be part of Diamond Mine anymore. Diamond Mine. Oh, hey, I just did it, Bruce. I said Diamond Mine. Kelly was ragging on Bruce for that. I don't think they're going to be around much longer. I've been kind of saying that for a few weeks now. They've been foreshadowing it pretty well. Especially, you know, the other kind of telling thing right now too, is there's a lot of individual storylines developing for everybody within Diamond Mine. You have things going on between Roderick Strong and the Creeds, which is kind of a story an internal story within itself. We also have Ivy Nile starting to do some stuff on her own. You also have the Creeds kind of feuding with the tag division, which obviously they were feuding with tag division anyway. But kind of to my point, like, everybody kind of has their own thing that they're working on, and it does seem like those things are starting to become more important than Diamond Mine as a whole, at least kind of the way I'm perceiving it. So Bruce, to JB's email and kind of follow up on what Sean said.
Diamond Mine has been sort of a through line through kind of each episode of NXT the past few weeks with what's going on between Strong, Kemp, well, I got Kemp on the side, but between Roderick Strong and then the other members of Diamond Mine who came in, of course, after. And now Malcolm Bivens, aka Stokely Hathaway, he just debuted in AEW on Sunday night. So he is definitely no longer going to be an option for Diamond Mine in the future, which is unfortunate because while I do think that the Creed brothers have improved on the mic, so has Ivy Nile, that they're still a long way from anywhere near the level of what Stokely Hathaway is or was in NXT. So I kind of think that what we're going to see is I think Strong's going to have to lose this one because they're kind of, right now, Diamond Mine is stronger together than they are apart. And I think that while it's nice that they're starting to introduce more things for Ivy Nile, giving her more speaking lines and having her in more feuds, and they have the Creed brothers all over the tag team division, and I hope they become tag team champions on Saturday. I just don't think that each as a standalone act right now is able to do that without having some support. And for me, I think what you want is to have Diamond Mine stay with the three of them, maybe add someone here or there, and then they kind of become this new iteration of Diamond Mine that sort of take the group to a new level that wasn't there before with what we thought Diamond Mine was going to be in the first place. So people are behind the Creed brothers. People are like Ivy Nile. I think that this is a good way to have a nice heel faction. And, you know, NXT has started to have more factions. And because so many of them lean heel, it'd be good to have at least one that leans more face.
Yeah, that was something we kind of talked a little bit about last week too. Is the Creed's breaking off, or Roddy? Sorry, not the Creed's breaking off. Roddy breaking off from the group, and them kind of continuing on either under the Diamond Mine brand or with some sort of a different name. Personally, I think I would rather see them like rebrand themselves. The Creed's, Ivy Nile, Damon Kemp, if he sticks around with the group, kind of rebrand themselves, even if they just go by the Creed's and Ivy Nile or something. So I think that Diamond Mine name is kind of going to be sullied. It doesn't really mean as much as I think they wanted it to mean, when Diamond Mine was kind of first formed. So, my additional two cents there. Sean, anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, I got some notes. Let me bring those up. I had a newborn screaming in the background. I'm glad you can't hear that.
No worries. Yes, congrats.
I know you guys probably don't want to get to it this quickly, but let me say this first. I'm high on Zion Quinn, not because he's so great, but because the bar is what it is for people in NXT. And if I were Vince McMahon, I would snatch you off of there so fast if you could wrestle just a little bit. Like there's a lot that not a lot. There's definitely enough people to where people would say I kind of took everything out of that I bled them dry. Like it's enough people to where I think they could have a solid roster of jobbers. I don't want to call them jobbers. Just people who would work main event and level up stuff like that. Get 10 wins here. Get 2 losses on the main roster against AJ Styles, Finn Balor. You're still pretty good. You just lost to people who are, world champions. That's a guy, a heel, that's pretty good. He could have squashes. He could do this. He could do that. He's kind of here, kind of there. He could be a henchman. I think that's a Zion Quinn. I think that I keep wanting to say Zion Williamson, but that's what I think a Zion Quinn is and what NXT truly needs to be. I don't know if there are any truly, like, sure, there could be breakout stars, but I don't know where they are yet. But I know if you start on the way I'm saying, the idea I have, if you just start them like you're doing Zion Quinn, just keep booking him the way you're booking him. That was a really good loss. He was beating Wesley. That was a great match. You know, he can be carried in the match, and he can carry a little bit. I like him. Long story short, I know you guys don't see a lot in him, but who for the model I just brought up, who do you see maybe fitting something like that, a heel or a face that could kind of string a few wins, like, you know, like 8 wins together, and then go to the main roster, have a really good match with somebody in an open challenge, and then get kind of sent back down to kind of feud with someone else and just kind of keep their momentum going like that.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but the first one that came to mind, and it actually sort of, I think, makes sense, and that's going to be Sangha. And it's not like it shouldn't be the first name I think of, but it's the first one that came to my mind. Because he's trying to get, you know, rebranded a little bit right now after being Grayson Waller's heavy and being a very unsuccessful one at that. I liked what he did tonight with Wes Lee in that little backstage segment. You're kind of trying to pep him up a little bit. It kind of gave him a little bit of character. You kind of understand a little bit more about, like, what he's about right now. Because, like, with Grayson Waller, he just kind of seemed like some, you know, mean bodyguard type figure, right? But now he's kind of, you know, he's showing he's got a little bit of heart here. You know, he's going to bat for Wesley. He sees that Wesley has that heart. You know, wants to see him succeed. I also liked last week. It wasn't a perfect match by any stretch of imagination, and I'm sure Wesley, you know, made Sangha look a lot better than he probably is at this point in his career. However, I think if they were to keep booking Sangha strong in, like, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months from now, he could be at a point where, kind of under that model that you were talking about, you know, he could string together some wins between Level Up and NXT, or even Main Event for that matter, you know, if they want to do something like that. I think I'd rather keep them, have the brand separate, so have just NXT talent show up on Level Up until they were ready to be utilized in that way up on the main roster. But even that, I'm not, I guess, super high on. I think I just want to see a call-up when there's a call-up. But still, under what you were kind of talking about, Sangha was the first one that came to mind in terms of, like, a heel. Grayson Waller, actually, is another one that could probably, you know, handle that as well. I mean, he's been phenomenal on the mic. He's a decent hand in the ring. So I think he could probably string together, you know, a decent, you know, run of wins down in NXT. And then kind of be some fodder for somebody, like you said, like AJ Styles or Edge, or heck, you could even feed him to somebody like Damian Priest, you know, to kind of build him up a little bit, you know, especially with him being in the Judgment Day and the kind of overall perception of the Judgment Day not being, I think, what they want it to be. So, you know, kind of add a little bit of fuel to the fire there. But yeah, that's kind of what I got off the top of my head. Bruce, what about you?
It's funny he brings up Zion Quinn, because in my report about Quinn, I said it's fine with him because we know where he's going to be slotted at in NXT, and this is exactly where he's going to be slotted at in NXT.
Yeah.
So for me, there's nothing wrong with him being that person. He has a look that Vince McMahon definitely will like. Sangha is also a good choice because he also has a look and size that Vince McMahon will like. So for me, I think what they're doing right now with the people in NXT, at least on the men's side, with these people that are going to be there to put others over they're doing a good job of that, at least. I'm not sure if we're looking at the women's side who that would be necessarily from NXT, but from the men's side, I would stick with Zion Quinn or, as you said, Sangha. I think those would be good choices, but it just comes down to, is Vince McMahon going to book Sangha to be a foreign heel like he's doing with Veer Mahan right now? And if that's the case, I don't think it's going to go over well, because from all accounts, and Tom Stacka said it, Sangha's just a cool dude to be around and a nice guy too. I do think that those two, though, have the most potential in that regard to be the ones who have a solid career just putting others over.
Caden Carter would be good for the women's side. Somebody you could pop in and out that's good in the ring, but, you know, like, somebody you could kind of seamlessly fit in, but, like, if you just give them a little bit of a boost, a little bit of a push, Nikki kind of stand out from the crowd. I don't know where his ceiling is, but somebody I would definitely give a shot to. I think she's better on the mic than Ember Moon, so there's that. Of course, she's not as good as her in the ring, but like, it's a decent substitute. You're going to get more on the mic, more charisma, carry more segments, and then you still get solid enough work in the ring.
I was actually pretty impressed with her on the mic tonight, in that six-woman segment there. So I could get down on that.
Yeah, she's good. I don't know about Katana Chance. That name, I'm never going to get behind that.
No, she's always going to – I'm just Casey Canzaro. Like, it's so hard writing Katana Chance in a report. Ugh.
Yeah, I think that could have been Nikita Lyons' name. It looks like that would have been Nikita Lyons' name.
You're right.
Yeah, right.
Today.
So, oh yeah, that's what I was getting to. I didn't want to take up all your time.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah. I brought it up to a buddy of mine. I said, because he's the one who brought up Nikita Lyons to me. He notoriously says, wrestling, you're a grown man. I don't watch that stuff, blah, blah, blah. But one day he shows me a picture of Nikita Lyons and all the nicknames they came up with, like Yam Yam, Thicolo, or something like lots of nicknames.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful nicknames. Bruce, you had one. What was it again? Booty Giuliani. That one still makes me laugh. That's my favorite one. But besides all the jokes, though, I told him what I said, oh, man, seems like she's not – I don't really know how to put it. I don't want to say she's not on the right side politically because that's actually false, technically. But I don't really know what her views are. But she seems to be – she seems to have a certain ideology that doesn't line up with what people are expressing today. And I mean just today. Like, I don't know what they'll express tomorrow. But, I pretty much laid it out for him. He was like, man, I don't care at all. That's not how you put it. But my question to you guys is not just Nikita Lyons, because I don't think this is going to stop her at all. It clearly isn't. He wants to go actually see her in person. That's never happened to me. No one's ever said, I want to go see this wrestler because they're quote-unquote cool. We'll just keep it at that. I don't think this will hurt her at all, but do you guys think it'll hurt her? And follow-up question is, should wrestlers go back to the days where they keep their policies, personal, private policies, personal and private? Instead of
I think we all need to do that.
Yeah.
I think we all need to do that.
Yeah.
Here's my two cents on that, the kind of like political thing. Like, yeah, I don't normally like to get into politics and things here on the show. Kind of we specifically try to avoid it. But I kind of do think that, especially if you're in the public eye, keep politics and religion out of things, because all you're going to do is alienate the people that have alternate views than you do. It's an American right to have whatever view it is that you want, which, whether you think that's right or wrong, but that's the way it is. So, you've got those views, but like, yeah, especially if you're in the public eye, like keep it private. You know, it's like when Kane, for example, Kane growing up was one of my favorite wrestlers. Like he debuted just when I was a little kid. I was terrified of him. But then like I went on, even though it was a bad story looking back on it now, kind of terribly done, but Kane kind of went on that journey to become human, and he spoke with the little voice box and everything. Like I really latched on to Kane and that character and even Glenn Jacobs as a human being, learning kind of about him, before he became mayor in Knox County anyway. Like for example, like when they, way back in the day, a bunch of wrestlers went on, WWE wrestlers went on, The Weakest Link, and Kane was there in full getup in like his mask and everything. And like, I think he was the last one standing, was super, super smart dude. And then I start seeing some of his tweets, and I really don't agree with a lot of the things that he was saying politically on his mayor, Glenn Jacobs' Twitter over there. And I hate to try – I hate the fact that, like, my brain works in the way that, like, if somebody has some of these, like, beliefs I strongly disagree with, it sullies their body of work, but it does. It kind of lessens that body of work in my head, and I'm sure a lot of other people, whether that's right, wrong, or indifferent, and I'm sure a lot of other people kind of work in that way too. So I think there's certainly some people that may start shying away from Nikita Lyons if that is true, if she has some, you know, beliefs that some people don't necessarily agree with. Yeah, I think it might hurt her a little bit with those people, but I don't think it's going to hurt her overall trajectory whatsoever. WWE historically is very, employs a lot of very right-wing leaning people, not everybody, you know, like Daniel Bryan and Gargano, things like that. But I don't think it's going to hurt her at all. You know, she seems to have the whole package for what WWE is looking for. She has the sex appeal.
Yes,
she
does. Sorry.
She supposedly
somebody was going to do it. It had to be me.
She's kind of got, I guess, the in-ring skills they're looking for or whatever. So I think if she's able to kind of keep her nose clean otherwise, she's going to be just fine. I've rambled on enough, Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah. We can move on.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Okay, so going from that, Sean, any follow-up, or should we head over and talk with our good friend Ryan?
I did want to follow up, not on Nikita herself necessarily, but the blueprint. What?
Matt Morgan.
Right? Man,
I thought he said blue pants.
No. You want to talk about personal disappointment, Matt Morgan. Jeez. Like, that's a sore subject, man. Jesus. Like, he can tweet whatever he wants all day. He just disappointed me, period. Anyway, I kind of see that, you know, WWE doesn't mind leaning towards, it looks like they're trying to go back a little bit before, like, to maybe the Glamazon days, or not, maybe not even that, just when they had the women's championship. You know, when you had China and Victoria, when they had it, women of that stature, women who were bigger, you know, physically. It always kind of kills me that people say, Charlotte's this man's type, but blonde and big breasts and stuff. I was like, yeah, but, like, Sable's the one they hate. You know what I mean? It was never about that. It was about, are you marketable? Can they use you? What have you? Because, you know, a lot of people, there's not a lot of big-breasted blondes in WWE. Never really has been a ton of them just running around, you know, carbon copies. But they do like China. You know, they like someone who's strong yet feminine. China, the Glamazon. I would say Nikita Lyons fits that profile a bit.
Victoria.
But,
yeah, Victoria.
Right.
Sure.
But then you get to Alexa Lopez, you know, and it's like she can't wrestle. I'm sorry. She looks the part, but she can't wrestle. She can talk, acting. Pretty shabby too. And then you get to Cora Jade. So well, my question to you guys is, what the hell are they looking for? Because you got Nikita Lyons. You can do whatever you want with center up there. You got Mandy Rose. I get that part. Real quick, Gigi Dolan is definitely chewing up scenery every time she's with Mandy Rose. Like, Gigi Dolan is clearly the future. And if I had to put my money on any two people, would be Grayson Waller and Gigi Dolan coming out as future WrestleMania main eventers, because they can talk, and it's nothing to them. But my question is, what exactly are they looking for? Because I'm not exactly sure. I see Raquel Gonzalez, and then I see Ashanti, you know. So I'm just kind of confused.
I think it kind of comes down to, like, what you're talking about is, like, you know, finding things that can be marketable. I mean, at least in NXT, I think they're trying to lean more towards that sex appeal. I mean, you have I can't think of what she's going by. Ember Moon's going by now on the Indies. Athena something. Yeah. As soon as you said it, it's coming to my
YouTube
brain.
Specialist.
Yeah, and she had recently come out and said something like that. Before she left, everybody, the direction was everybody should dress like Mandy Rose. I don't know if that's exactly what they told him, or if that was the way she worded it. But that's something we've even heard before she said that. They wanted people, especially women down in NXT, to dress sexier and kind of a little bit more towards those Attitude Era days. So I think right now that's kind of like what they're looking for down there in NXT. I mean, they're certainly looking for youth, especially signing somebody like Thea Hale, right out of high school. We'll certainly see if that was a good signing or not. Fingers crossed, because I really want to see her succeed. Especially at such a young age. I'm hoping that she's got the maturity level and everything to like handle this. I think that's kind of like what they're looking for down there on the main roster. I think it kind of goes back to that, whatever you can do to be marketable. That's kind of how it's always been. I don't know what the specific direction right now is, but that's something they've always done. What can we do to, create t-shirts, to create some sort of merchandise, or a catchphrase, some sort of gimmick that people can latch onto. That's kind of at least what, like, where my mind goes with that. What about you, Bruce?
The big thing that's been coming out is that they're trying to, for the most part, Nathan Frazer's aside and whatnot, they're looking for people that have no experience in professional wrestling so that they can put their imprint on them and build them up how they want them, specifically in WWE style. So that's why you're seeing a lot of people who definitely are not in the top end of wrestlers in terms of their ability. But this is what they're trying to do with NXT, is find these people, see how much they can improve from when they started to where they're at every couple months. And we've heard that if they're not impressed with you after about 90 days, they're going to release you. That's what happened with Harland. So for us, I think we also, not just recalibrate what we expect of NXT as a show, but understand that what they're looking for are people that really have no wrestling experience. And that's why a lot of these wrestlers may not look as refined as we would like them to be on national television. So I think, they're trying to find high-end athletes, whether they're football, basketball, track, volleyball. If they have a college athletic background, the better. If they went to the pros, better too. So they're just looking for people that have athleticism that they can then mold into their idea of what a professional wrestler should look like.
Real quick, and I'm done, I promise. I think that's one of the really messed up downsides to pro wrestling. You don't really grow up doing that, All these athletes they're finding grew up, like you can play basketball from when you're little all the way through college and then go into the league or whatever, and you've been doing that one thing. When they find these athletes, they're athletes, but they haven't been wrestling at all. So it's a catch-22. You get this great athlete, but they haven't been wrestling. And that's what kind of kills me, that they say, oh, we're not taking indie people. It's like, so you're taking people with zero reps. But it's crazy to say this, but WWE doesn't have a refined product enough to – maybe I shouldn't say that, because maybe it's too soon to say that. We got to see a crop of people. But, like, look at Lash Legend,
Athleticism definitely does not equal in-ring ability. I'm trying to think of some people off the top of my head here that, like, Nathan Jones is somebody, had a great physique, had a great look, but God, he just couldn't get it done in the ring to the point where they had to pull him out of a WrestleMania, match. Undertaker wound up having athleticism absolutely does not equal in-ring ability. And I think, I think they're doing themselves a disservice by trying to go after those people. But hey, then again, I'm not in charge of a multi-billion dollar company. So, at least, that's my two cents, is like they're doing themselves a disservice by hiring people that they don't necessarily know can actually wrestle. They've got the developmental territory and everything for that. But I feel like you're better off hiring indie guys, or at least, you know, maybe a mix, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be half and half. Yeah. I don't know what the ratio is, but hire a mix of people like they were doing, you know, have your own homegrown talent, like somebody like Alexa Bliss, you know, homegrown talent that, that really, you know, shined, especially on the main roster. Excuse me one second. She really shined, especially once she got to the main roster. But then, you know, somebody like Sasha, which maybe not be the best example right now, you know, who really thrived on the indies and then, you know, had a great career in WWE.
And I think that's what they see a lot of. When you're an indie person, you get all the reps, you're kind of a jerk, you know. And you hear it from time to time with people, and it ends up being right, and you say, oh, no, it's WWE's fault. We always kind of go for WWE and say they were the problem first. And that's their fault. That's the reputation they built up from themselves. But I think the indie talent amongst the company has built up a reputation with WWE that they don't know how to act or be humble or, you know, heard it with Keith Lee, heard it with Cross. You just hear it with people, and then they release these people, and then, like, you even heard it with Ryback, and look at Ryback. You know, it's just you hear it,
yeah.
And then it takes a little bit, but then you see it, and you go, "Oh, see, this guy thought he had a lot of reps, and he could come in and just tell us how to run a business, and he doesn't know what we want and what we're doing." Like, it's the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, and I just like that's why I asked the question, like, "What are they looking for with these women?" I can see both sides, but then it's like, well, you're not getting either one of them. You're getting Nikita Lyons, and what do you got? I can look at her all day, but, like, that it's got to be – I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm watching this for the sport of it.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
It's not going to work out. So, yeah, that's all I had. I know that was a lot. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. All right, yeah, definitely. Looking forward to Saturday. We'll talk with you. We'll talk with you then, man. All right, thanks, Sean. So – Let's go over to Ryan and talk with him. What did you think of the show tonight, Ryan?
Oh, it was a fine show, as usual as always.
All right. So what do you got for us?
My first question is: they're promoting these NXT house shows on tonight's programming. What do you think they're going to do to get people to go to these? You think they'll have like a special stipulation, like say Wade Barrett be a special guest referee for a NXT World Championship match, or like they'll have one or two WWE main roster guys or ladies show up for these shows to help sell tickets?
The thought didn't really cross my mind before you asked it, so I don't know. My immediate thought is, you know, these particular areas that we're so used to having, you know, either weekly or maybe not weekly, but, you know, frequent NXT house shows, you know, as Tom would call it, the coconut loop, you know, these places, like, they're probably starved for some local wrestling at this point. Not just local wrestling, but just wrestling in general at this point. So I kind of see them probably not really. I don't think they're going to have a hard time selling tickets. I don't think they usually did. However, that said, where this is kind of a special thing for them, especially where this is a completely new roster at NXT 2.0, wouldn't surprise me if they did some sort of a stipulation to help draw, you know, a live crowd. I don't know if it would necessarily be something like bringing down a main event, you know, main roster kind of guy or girl for that matter. I don't know if it necessarily be big enough for something like that, but I could certainly see them, you know, cage match or, you know, ladder match for a title or something like that to help, you know, beef up the card. It's something they do very frequently at, you know, WWE house shows. I mean, I think every house show I've ever been to has had a cage match, which is, you know, nuts. I don't know anything. I don't know for sure, but that's kind of like my immediate kind of knee jerk reaction. Bruce?
From what I understand, this coconut loop, these loops are specifically made for people in NXT to get some reps. So people that go to these know exactly what they're coming for. They don't expect to see people from Raw or SmackDown on there. These are probably going to be places where talent who are just getting their start or just starting a feud are going to do the same match over and over again from what I can remember of Tom reporting before. And that's good for them because then that means that they're going to get more reps in front of a live crowd, a crowd that's probably going to be more forgiving because they understand exactly what it is they're coming in for. So I think that in terms of selling tickets, it's not – they don't really care about – how do I put this? The people that are going to buy tickets are going to be those that probably bought tickets before and know what these shows are going to be because of their experience before the pandemic, before all the shows stopped happening with NXT.
Yeah, for sure. And that was kind of what I was trying to say. I guess you heard it a little bit better than I did, but that was kind of like what I was trying to say is a lot of the people that already are, you know, were kind of going to these shows are probably going to wind up going back. You know, you certainly know already what they're getting into, but I think they're going to be, I don't think they're going to have any issues selling tickets for that. But anyway, Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight?
My second question is on Toxic Attraction. With the titles being vacated, and I don't see a lot of tag teams right now, female tag teams on the main roster, can you see them maybe winning this tournament and have Mandy Rose win one of the women's titles so they pretty much do the same gimmick they do in NXT and take all the gold with them?
So as far as I'm aware, from what I was seeing being reported today, it was even a post up on PWTorch.com about it as well, that the women's, the WWE women's tag team tournament has kind of just been indefinitely postponed for some reason. They haven't actually talked about it like on air, but the only time they really brought it up was when Michael Cole brought it up on, I think it was SmackDown, right after Naomi and Sasha walked out. And since then, it's kind of like, hasn't been talked about since, and at this point they're thinking they're just going to scrap the idea entirely. So I don't think that that's kind of a plausible thing at this point, because the tournament isn't happening. That said, with those titles being vacated, I mean, I don't know. I think Toxic Attraction right now still belongs down at NXT. Mandy Rose is coming. I mean, she's, I don't want to say coming along because she's been wrestling forever at this point, but yeah, she certainly picked up a step since being down in NXT. I feel like she has improved, regardless of what like Kelly might say. I think she certainly has improved, especially with her character gimmick, her in-ring work. Yeah. Okay. It's not the best, but you know, compared to some of the other women down in NXT, it's, you know, light years ahead of where they are. But Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, I still think need a little bit more time down in NXT to kind of feel more comfortable in the WWE environment. They probably already do at this point, but I kind of think they need to get some more reps in down there. You know, again, these Coconut Loop shows are going to help out to Bruce's point. You know, about the last question anyway. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at there. I wouldn't be like opposed to it if that's the way they went and they brought Toxic Attraction up, had, you know, Mandy win one of the titles, and I don't know. I don't know if I really want her in the title scene right now on the main roster, now that I think about it. Maybe like 6 months from now, depending on where the main roster women's divisions are. But I don't think now is the time to bring Toxic Attraction up, even if it would make sense because of the vacant tag titles. Bruce?
Yeah, part of me just wonders, what's the point of having tag teams if there's no title for them to kind of strive for? But I do understand there are times when it makes sense to have singles wrestlers pair up when people they're feuding with overlap. So I do hope that the women's tag team titles do come back. What they're still putting forth the women's tag titles on NXT, at least for now, would indicate that they do have plans to bring back the women's tag team championships for Raw and SmackDown in the future. And, you know, Toxic Attraction could be a possibility to bring those titles back. They could just they could pull an Asuka, not necessarily be undefeated, but go to the main roster, quote unquote, and then they could relinquish their titles as they can make a rightful claim to be the new tag team champion as a heel act it works too, because they were champions in NXT. So I can see that happening if they do bring them back, if they do want to move Toxic Attraction. But if we just go by how they weren't in a match tonight, but if we just go by how they were tonight, Jeannie Dolan could probably do some good work on the main roster right now. Mandy Rose, I think we've seen the level that she'd be at, even though she has improved here, and her character does fit her better. I don't think in-ring-wise she necessarily is going to be someone that can count on for a championship-quality pay-per-view match. So I would try and be careful there. I also don't think that they should necessarily be brought up right now. I think especially JC Jane needs a lot more work. Her promo tonight was pretty bad. And I don't like saying that, but it just, she was trying a bit too hard, and it just also making jokes about people's height and whatnot. It just, cause she was talking about Kaden Carter and Casey Kent, or Katana Chance. And it's just not necessarily not a good look when you're doing that kind of stuff. It's more, it's not even high school bullying. That's kind of like elementary school bullying. So they could do better there in terms of not going to so what is so not just obvious, but also what's the word? Detrimental to a certain extent. So beyond that, though, I think that they do need more work. And with the tag team division, there's like you said, there's not much in NXT or on the main roster for to feud with. And That's just gonna have to be something that over time they improve. And we just, I hate saying the whole, you know, give it time, but they have the titles. They need to make use of the titles, and they need to at least put some effort and thought into it. Because if they don't, then they're kind of just proving what Sasha Banks and Naomi said, what they were doing right in terms of wanting better booking for the tag team division. And it's just going to come off as if, you know, even worse for WWE to a certain extent, if they do all this and still there's no emphasis, or they went through all of that bashing Naomi and Sasha Banks, and there's still no kind of answer to what they were making the arguments about. So, yeah, I just don't think that they're ready for the main roster, and I don't want to see them there. Then again, I don't think they need to be the dominating force of NXT for too much longer as well.
All right, Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight?
Back on these reps you're talking about, let me rephrase that first question. Maybe not necessarily for a draw, but I remember when ECW used to do these house shows, they had like Brad Armstrong come out of retirement and wrestle some of the younger guys. If you see like maybe like a Curtis Axel or some, not necessarily Curtis Axel, but anyone that's like a seasoned veteran working with these guys or female to get these NXT wrestlers ready for the main roster, because I don't think a rep is as impactful if you're working with someone that's very inexperienced. If you got someone that's got like 20, 25 years of wrestling experience, I think that's a lot more meaningful and a lot better use of your time working with those people.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I don't know. I kind of tend to lean towards it's probably not going to happen. You know, and they're probably just going to be, you know, kind of what, you know, Bruce was saying, like how they used to be. It was really just for them to kind of get those reps. We are working with each other and kind of, you know, learning, because I mean, that's kind of what developmental is, you know, whether it's developmental through WWE or you're training at, you know, an indie school or something like that. You know, you don't always have a, you know, 25 plus year vet to work with other than maybe the trainers, you know? So you are working with each other. You're trying to build each other up and make each other better. Yes, you probably would learn a lot more from, you know, a vet coming down and working with them a little bit, but, I don't think for these shows, I don't think they're going to be big enough for it to warrant like somebody like, you know, Finn Balor or AJ Styles or somebody like that to come down, unless, you know, they really wanted to give back to the younger guys and girls for that matter.
Or they're in the area.
Or they're in the area, yeah. You know, heck, I happened to go to a WWE house show in Boston once, and The Rock was in the area, and he just showed up to a house show. That was really weird, but awesome at the same time. So it could happen. It could certainly happen. But I kind of lean more towards it. It's just going to probably be, you know, the NXT guys and probably even the undercard for the most part, because that's kind of how it used to be, especially from what, you know, Tom would report on. You know, they were always the your kind of undercard, and they might have, you know, the main event might be a couple people that, you know, were at least on TV. But, you know, if not like WWE, you know, the NXT champion or women's champion or something like that. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see like many, you know, big attractions coming down for those shows. Could be wrong, but I don't think that's because like Bruce said, that's really not the point of those shows. The point is really to showcase the younger talent, you know, the developmental talent, and allow them to get some reps in front of crowds that aren't the full sale crowd.
All I'll add to that is producer Curtis Axel.
Yes, producer Curtis Axel. I saw that today too. Because I actually didn't get a chance to watch Raw last night, but I guess he was spotted holding back somebody as a security guard. So I guess he did wind up getting the job as a backstage producer or agent or whatever it was. But good to see that, 'cause I like that guy. I like Curtis Axel. He's a good dude. All right, Ryan. Anything else for us tonight, or should we hit the mailbag?
The only thing I have to say is you were saying it was sort of childish, toxic attraction, is making fun of people's heights. Well, there's like even people I work with and people from my family that have made fun of my height, and I'm about 5'7", 5'8". So I think it's not really out of the realm, you know, of a real-life situation that toxic attraction would make fun of someone's height.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Bruce.
Sure, and it still doesn't take away from the fact that it's an elementary school tactic that is still being used by adults who should have, especially in pro wrestling, should have better insults than your height, you're so short. When as Caden Carter said, that team's actually defeated you, oh, so big giants before. So, yeah, I just don't think it's a smart, intelligent in a humorous way insult. It's just kind of low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better term.
All right. And, I mean, I kind of agree there. Like, I feel like, yeah, sure, it works, I guess, in a sense that, like, it is that, like, kind of high school insult, and I think a lot of people can probably relate to it and whatever. But at the same time, like, I wish they'd use something that's a little bit more, I don't want to use the term highbrow, but kind of a little bit more highbrow, to get a little bit, you know, a little more heat. Like, I can't imagine, you know, Triple H just, you know, making fun of, well, actually, no, I take that back. Yes, I can. I can certainly imagine Triple H making fun of somebody for being short. But yeah, regardless, you know, a lot of times, you know, you do get some more of those highbrow insults, especially when he was being, you know, back like in the early 2000s, Triple H, like Cerebral Assassin, and he was cutting some really vicious promos against like Stone Cold and things like that. Still those 15-minute Hunter promos, but regardless, you know, like height or kind of those low-hanging fruit things weren't, you know, something that he went for. I think if you want to try and be successful, go for something that is a little more unique, that's going to make the crowd go, oh, burn, a little bit more than height jokes. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at with that. Anything, any follow-up or can we move on?
You can go.
Yeah, I think you can move on. I personally that can relate to, because I've had, you know, a number of people say, make similar comments to me, even though I'm not nearly as short as what Kat is.
No, for sure. I can.
I'm 5'8", too, so I can relate. I just still think it's, yeah.
Hey, all right. I'm not usually the tallest one in the room at 5'9", so here we go. But all right. So, Ryan, certainly, as always, appreciate it. If you guys want to be a part of this show, you certainly can do that. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. or you can call in at 515-605-9345 and hit 1 on your keypad once you get into the queue, because that would let me know that you want to be a part of the show. So with that, let us go back over. Oh, I closed the mailbag. So let me stall for just a moment while I open a new tab and get there. Head over to the mailbag. We already read an email from JB, so we'll read one from our good friend, Dr. Kevin P. Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. After attending Raw last night in Des Moines and serving as Wade's correspondent, one of the comments I made that was that the Theory Ciampa Ali segment was one of the most dead of the 9 segments last night. I can't speak to that myself because, like I said, still haven't watched Raw from this week, so I didn't see it myself. But watching one of the most prolific NXT champions being reduced to a minor piece in a different feud, I got to thinking, looking at the issue through both the NXT lens and Ciampa's lens, what do you think about Ciampa coming back to NXT? Thanks, as always. Listen to 8 years back and go VIP. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So I'm always going to be in the camp of Ciampa coming back to NXT because Ciampa's like my favorite wrestler at the moment. So I'm selfishly going to just say yes, absolutely. Through an analyst lens, like, yeah, I kind of do wish he was back in NXT 2.0. Yes, it's a developmental brand to get people over and whatnot. I still think you need to have a couple veterans on the show. Number one, to draw eyeballs to the product, to then showcase these younger talents. But two, to help those younger talents, as we were just talking about, kind of develop and things like that. I think it would be nice to have somebody like Champ back down to NXT, especially if he wanted to. Back in the day, both him and Gargano said they were never going to leave NXT. They didn't want to do the main roster schedule, especially Ciampa. Like, his career was even starting to wind down before he was in, the cruiserweight class, the first cruiserweight classic, where him and Johnny first kind of came into the company. He was kind of already on borrowed time then with his neck. Then he had additional neck problems. He said he didn't ever want to do the main roster schedule. So if he wanted to come back down to NXT, I would gladly welcome him back down here. I think it would not only make the show better, but it would also, he's got a lot of knowledge, from being an indie guy for so long, as well as from being in the NXT and WWE environment for so long at this point. He's got a lot of knowledge to offer these younger guys. I think it would be a good idea to have somebody like that down there. Now, that being said, yeah, it sucks to kind of see where he's been at on the main roster. Even when he was on the main roster before he left NXT, like down in NXT, he was this big deal. Everybody's chanting his name. He feels important. He has a lot, like, he's got a lot more charisma and he's much more animated and lively. And then you see him up on Raw and he's just, I'm Tommaso Ciampa, and all of that fire is gone, because he's kind of reinventing himself on the main roster, as a lot of people in NXT seemingly need to do. I don't know. I think I want to kind of give him more of a chance on the main roster right now to like build himself and see if the company can build him to be kind of as big as he was down in NXT. He certainly has the ability to do it. But if like in the next like 9 months to a year, like he's still kind of in the same spot, hell yeah, put him back down in NXT. Let him tear the roof off the place, for like twilight of his WWE career, because I don't think he's going to be wrestling a hell of a lot longer. He might have another 4 or 5 years left in him, but I don't think it's going to – I'd be surprised if it's even that. I'd totally be down for something like that. Anyway, I've rambled long enough. Bruce, feel free to ramble.
So – if you want Ciampa to come down, that's fine. He was perfect for NXT. Doesn't seem like anything's happening. I mean, if he does end up joining Judgment Day, then there's something there at least. And that's probably, say what you want about being NXT, but being part of Judgment Day is probably a bigger role and got to get him more people to see what he does than being back in NXT. So
100%.
If I'm Tommaso Ciampa, he's probably getting paid more being on the main roster than in NXT. So we can't always forget that aspect to it. So if he's happy being up there, then fine. he gets to, you know, work with Edge. He gets to learn from Edge. A lot of people my age, your age, Edge is, and Tommaso Ciampa is not that much older than we are. They, you know, Edge is one of the people that they look to as one of their inspirations for getting into the business and whatnot. So being able to work with him and picking his brain and learning some things from Edge, and maybe Edge learning some things from Ciampa too, it's going to be better for him than coming back down and sort of being the big fish in a small pond again. But, you know, personally, it might be a better idea just because of his family and his kid, whatnot. So, there's that. But I do think that for his professional career, especially if he wants to wind it down and become, you know, maybe a producer, maybe he becomes a referee or maybe something like that. Maybe not a referee. He's too yoked and too noticeable for that. But, you know, if he wants to have some kind of backstage role with WWE once his neck finally says no more and he can't wrestle anymore, then, you know, being on the main roster right now is probably the best option for him, especially since he gets to work with those producers a lot more closely than in NXT, and he's learning with Edge and under the tree of Edge right now.
All right. So let's go to another email here from Brian Alston. Brian says, hello, friends. So the former LA Knight has officially appeared on SmackDown. He showed up on the May 20th edition, is now known as Max Dupree. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He was also on the May 27th episode. Max Dupree is running Maximum Male Models, which will now consist of a new generation of superstars that can headline Paris Fashion Week and headline WrestleMania. Lofty goals. Question, if you could draft the NXT 2.0 wrestler to if you could draft an NXT 2.0 wrestler to SmackDown and join Maximum Male Models, who would it be? Although Max Dupree said males, if you could draft an NXT female wrestler, who would she be? Don't forget to listen to the VIP exclusive NXT 8 years back every Saturday with Kelly Wells and Tom Stout talk about the NXT TV show from Saturday 8 years ago. This Saturday, June 4th, is June 4th, 2014 is the episode they're going to be talking about, is the follow-up from the very first NXT TakeOver. There's a Tyler Breeze video that's worth seeking out. In addition, Kelly and Tom talk movies. This week I sent in a question about dark fantasy movies. P.S. There's a VIP sale, 30 days for just $1.99, best dirt sheet bargain. You'll dig up. Thanks, Brian L. Alston. Brian, thank you for all the plugs, man. Certainly appreciate that because, hey, it makes my life easier. I don't need to remember them. So you threw them in there for me. Appreciate it, man. Okay, Maximum Male Models with Max Dupree. Immediately, my mind goes to Pretty Deadly. I feel like that could be hilarious. I mean, they just showed up in NXT, so like I don't necessarily want to see them move away from NXT just yet. We haven't actually got a chance to talk about Pretty Deadly yet tonight. I don't think anyway. But they, for me, they have been an awesome addition to the tag division in NXT. So I don't necessarily want to see them go away just yet. But in a fantasy booking world, that I could certainly see working. Grayson Waller is somebody else that I could see going up there and being all full of himself and also being able to, like, you know, go in the ring, quote, headline WrestleMania. Those are a couple that immediately come to my mind. If I'm going with 2.0 wrestler, Tiffany Stratton, if you go in there, then I feel like she would be like, hey, why am I not in on this? So I can call her dad and see if he can get, you know, make a few phone calls and get her in on the group or something. Those are my immediate thoughts there. Bruce, what about you?
So he's asking if you could take Maximum, someone from NXT, and add them to his stable and on SmackDown, right?
Yeah, one male, one female.
Okay. So if I'm going to go with the dude, I'm thinking someone like Zion Quinn, because he has a good look, and I think that for Zion Quinn, like I said, we know what his level is going to be at NXT. That's probably the level he's going to be at on the main roster, although he might have more upside on the main roster because of his look and because of Vince McMahon. So I think Zion Quinn could be a good choice. And so I don't pick the same person in Tiffany Stratton. Let me think. Elektra Lopez could be a good person if they break her away from the God of the Phantasma. So she definitely could be someone that hits that mark for them. So yeah, I'll go with those two, Zion Quinn and Electra Lopez.
Sounds good to me. I can't argue with those either. All right, so we went long with the caller portion tonight. We haven't hit a whole lot of what actually happened on the show tonight, so let's see what we can do real quick. We probably won't touch on everything because I don't want this show to go like 4 hours. So I guess let's kind of start with – we'll start from the top. We'll talk about Pretty Deadly versus Damon Kemp and Roderick Strong. So this match – I like this. Damon Kemp and Roderick Strong basically last week told the Creed brothers that they're going to go and face Pretty Deadly before they have a chance to do so at In Your House, kind of to basically show them how it's done type of a deal. And it ended up culminating in this match here tonight where Pretty Deadly wound up going over after some interference from the Creeds on behalf of to try and help out their Diamond Mine brother. Brethren in Roderick Strong and Damon Kemp, but unfortunately Julius Creed wound up eating a tag title to the face, and the distraction really didn't go their way. Pretty Deadly were able to hit Spilt Milk, which is a great tag team finisher name, by the way, especially for that team. And then they were able to pick up the win. This was a halfway decent opener. Not the greatest NXT opener by any stretch, but I really like Pretty Deadly and what they're bringing to NXT right now. Like I said a little bit ago, I feel like both them and Nathan Fraser, for that matter, coming over from NXT UK have been a breath of fresh air in their respective divisions. The tag division, especially here with Pretty Deadly, the tag division's kind of been a little lackluster recently, even with the Dusty Classic kind of not happening all that long ago. There's a lot of, just kind of tag teams that were formed to be tag teams, out of singles wrestlers. So it's kind of nice to have like an actual legit tag team coming in here, especially where, like Grizzled Young Vets, where the hell are they, and there's a couple other tag teams that have kind of just disappeared. So it's kind of nice to see them come in, and I'm really a big fan of what they're doing so far. Damon Kemp, he did impress me here. He was clearly out wrestled by everybody else in the ring tonight, but that's obviously to be expected based on his level of experience compared to Roderick Strong and Pretty Deadly's experience as well. I'm blanking on their new names at the moment, Damon Kemp, I think he's definitely got some potential. He still needs some work, but hey, that's what developmental's for. So, Bruce, Pretty Deadly versus Damon Kemp or Roderick Strong.
I wrote that this is pretty much what you should expect from matches on NXT moving forward. And Kemp looked good when he was able to bust out his amateur wrestling stuff. But as you'd expect from someone with his level of experience, you could definitely see when he was trying to get to a spot on the mat or on the apron so that he could get ready for another spot. And so he needs to just work a little bit on that so it's not so obvious, but that's the thing that, most wrestlers have to work on regardless. But he showed some explosion, and my goodness, that slap he took from Roderick Strong was a very, very loud, loud slap.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Kudos to him for just taking it like that and not really having any fight. If I got slapped like that, I'd probably be on the ground and knocked out at the very least. So, that was, he did well. And I liked how, so the story now is that, to me, what's interesting about the story is that when Roderick Strong interfered for the Creed brothers, they won their match. But when the Creed brothers interfere to help Roderick Strong in his match, albeit in a different way, he loses the match. And so he justified it by saying that, well, he would have won by disqualification if they hit him with a title belt. So he turned it around on them as well, and this is leading to a match where the loser then leaves Diamond Mine. So for me, I like how they turned that a little bit and made Roderick still such a strong heel without necessarily, he wasn't so overbearing and over the top with it. He had a legitimate kind of, if you think about it from his perspective, he had a legitimate reason to be mad at them and to come at them so forcefully for what happened in the match.
All right, so let's go to we talked about Electra Lopez briefly, but we didn't really talk about the match, Cora Jade versus Electra Lopez. So Cora Jade and Electra Lopez have kind of had a bit of heat backstage over the past, I think it's really over the last week or two, maybe, if memory serves correctly. Last week, Cora Jade and her bestest best friend of all time, Roxanne Perez, were backstage. They're kind of just talking, I think, about the NXT breakout tournament. I think this is what they were talking about at the time. Electra Lopez came up, basically just kind of cut them down, saying how much better she was than them and all of that. Typical heel things, which kind of culminated into this match here tonight. Cora Jade looking for a little bit of retribution against Electra Lopez, minus T-Bar and whatever the other guys in Retribution were called. Anyway, let's move on from my attempt at a joke. Electra Lopez is, as Sean was saying a little bit ago, she still needs a lot of work. I think in terms of her character and like her mic skills and like her actually believing her character, I think she's fine. On the better side of fine. She's again still got some work, but again, it's developmental. It's the place to be for that. I think she's on track for where she should be with her character. Her in-ring ability is she still needs some work. There's a few missed time spots here. There's three that I can think of off the top of my head. One was a missed time drop kick. Actually, I guess two off the top of my head. One was a missed time seated drop kick where Cora Jade missed by a mile. I don't know if that was necessarily on Cora Jade or if it was on Lopez, but certainly something went wrong there. They were able to change the camera angle really fast, so if you didn't notice it, you probably wouldn't have noticed it. But for me, it was glaringly obvious. There was another spot where she, as in Electra Lopez, was getting thrown out of the ring by Cora Jade, and like she just basically tripped over herself, and like all of her momentum ended up getting lost, and then she kind of just like threw herself through the middle, through the top and middle rope, and it just looked really. Really weird. There's a few other spots in the match. I know there's another one that I wrote about in the hits and misses, and I can't seem to find it just skimming through the article real quick. So I don't remember exactly what it was, but regardless, this isn't the first time that we've had the same kind of criticism about Electra Lopez. I like her. I like her character and what she's brought to Legado del Fantasma, but I worry about her career. If Legado del Fantasma gets called up, she's not going to get called up. I really don't think she's at the point where she could be on the main roster and actually be believable in the ring, unless they were just going to give her some sort of a managerial role and have her wrestle very infrequently, at least until her skills are able to kind of get a little bit better. But she's certainly got a way to go. I think she could probably do it. She seems to at least have some of the fundamentals down, but some of the, more technical stuff, like I said, some of the timing and things like that just seem to be, I don't say non-existent because it wasn't non-existent, but certainly could have been better, I guess is a better way to put it. The Cora Jade went over in, I think it was about 3 minutes or so, pretty short match. Was a bit of a clunker, Bruce.
Yeah, there were just some obvious miscues here, and Lopez, she seems to not necessarily be improving too much, which is kind of a shame because she has the look and what they want in a wrestler in terms of, and a performer, but she just, it just isn't looking good for her in terms of. The future, I guess. I think, as you said, if Legado del Fantasma is called up, she's probably not going to get called up because of the lack of her in-ring abilities compared to theirs. And for her, that will be unfortunate because it could be a case where if that happens, she might not be too long for the company after that. Again, which would be unfortunate for her at least. And yeah, when it comes to Cora Jade, I'm not necessarily I've made my thoughts known on her before. I'm not the biggest fan of Cora Jade. I don't really buy her offense. It's just I don't really like her character. I know that she is sort of an attempt at reaching a younger audience with her kind of skater gimmick and just being a little younger and trying to act all cool. But maybe this is a notification that I am too old because I just don't.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. But then again, I don't know how many young people also buy the gimmick, buy the act. So that's another thing that I don't have enough hearsay or data about to actually make a good guess. It's just that for me, she does not necessarily work. And so I know for Kelly, this is probably the match that he's most looking forward to going back and watching because he loves both of them so much, especially Alexa Lopez. But yeah, I just think that the match served its purpose, and we even in three and a half minutes or so, a little over 3 minutes, however long it was, we saw that there is still a lot of work for Alexa Lopez to do, and Cora Jade, I think they're what she wants in a wrestler, so I think she'll be fine.
Yeah, I think Cora Jade's going to be fine. I'm kind of with you. I think I'm maybe a little bit higher on Cora Jade than you are, but not by much. She's not really connecting with me either. You know, her offense, like you said, really isn't super, super believable. I feel like this is kind of just with NXT 2.0 in general. Everybody just needs to stop and sell more. You know, there's a focus on just go, do a move and then get up and do the next move and get up and do the next move. Not many people are really selling and selling well. And I feel like if they could easily do that, kind of save their bodies a little bit and make things a little bit more dramatic, just by slowing down and selling. Cora Jade, I feel, is one that is kind of there. She will sell, you know, and I think there was a match where it was like her arm or her leg. I don't remember. You know, they were basically working that the entire match. She did a good job selling it. But, you know, just, I guess, you know, spot the spot anyway, that's kind of what I'm talking about. You know, her overall character, I think, I don't know, for me, it kind of almost feels like it's trying to be a 2022 rehash of Bayley in a way. Bayley worked, but this isn't really for me. You know, I want to like Cora Jade. I kind of, you know, I like her positivity. I like the spunk. I like the attitude. But there needs to be more to her character than she takes a skateboard to the ring and she was really, really, really excited to be a WWE superstar. You know, like I go back, you know, every once in a while, I go back to this. Like I remember Stone Cold Steve Austin and Wade Keller talking about who the hell is Seth Rollins. And at the time, he didn't really know who he was either. And, you know, now Seth Rollins is this kind of crazed lunatic on the main roster. You know, and he's actually, he's nestled very nicely into a few different gimmicks since then. And I kind of feel like that's where Cora Jade is right now. Like I know enough about her at this point. They've, you know, given us, you know, enough video packages and kind of, you know, enough to go on with her on air segments to know who she is. But at the same time, like, I said, she takes a skateboard to the ring and she's really, really excited to be in NXT and her best friend's Roxanne Perez. What kind of, it's not really a gimmick, you know, like there needs to be something else for you to latch onto. And I don't feel like I don't feel like it's there right now. You know, Bayley, at least, you know, kind of with that same happy go lucky, happy to be here type of an attitude. It was still new at that point. It wasn't, I wouldn't say new, it had been done before, but it was, you know, hadn't been done to death at this point. Or at that point rather. But she also had the hugger gimmick, you know, I'm a hugger. Like as stupid as that was, it still got over and Cora doesn't really have anything like that right now. So I think that's, at least in my head, that's kind of why I haven't really latched on to her. I like her. I want to like her. And I think that, you know, like you said, she's definitely got a future in WWE, especially if she stays on the trajectory she's going on. But I think there's a few things she needs to tweak before I can at least kind of buy in 100%. All right, let's go to we'll stop at Wes Lee versus Zion Quinn. We talked a little bit about Zion Quinn a bit ago. We didn't really talk about the match. This, so Zion Quinn, Wes Lee, for weeks now, Zion Quinn has, I guess, kind of been ducking the ducking this particular match. Wesley has been wanting to get his hands on Wesley for quite some time after, I think there was some interaction backstage. It kind of escapes me off the top of my head here. But for weeks now, this match hasn't been able to happen. Wesley was really looking to get his hands on Zion Quinn. Finally got his hands on him tonight. The match started off pretty explosive and maybe a little bit too explosive because I think it was the very first move they had was Zion Quinn basically like throwing Wesley into the corner and they kind of botched that right off the get-go. But they kind of quickly brought things around and I actually really enjoyed this match. Wesley has grown on me as a singles guy. I've gone on record many times to say MSK, I did not get down on. I really could not latch on to MSK. They, as I was just talking about with gimmicks, like I enjoyed, they had a good gimmick rather. I just did not enjoy it. I couldn't get down on it. It didn't connect with me. I never cared about them in the ring. Some of the matches are entertaining, sure, but like I couldn't really get invested in them. This particular match, especially you know with Wesley now being a singles guy, like he's kind of shown a lot of heart. As I said, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier. Sanga came out right before this match. Sanga was shown backstage, kind of giving Wesley a bit of a pep talk and telling him he's got a lot of heart and things. And that's a story they're telling with Wesley because he's going up against some competitors that like. Yeah, they're much bigger than he is and much stronger than he is. But, man, he's kind of showing, like, that X-Pac heart. If you remember, like, X-Pac would always get his beaten out of him. But somehow he'd either find a way to, like, come back a little bit or come back a lot of it and get a win. And, like, I saw that here tonight with Wesley. He did eventually get the win over Zion Quinn, which was great. It was a great kind of, like, comeback story. He got thrown around the ring all match long. I thought he made Zion Quinn look really good for Zion Quinn. You know, he like we've been talking this whole show, you know, Zion Quinn still got some room to grow, but the selling from Wesley was top notch here and really helped to sell the huge offense that they were trying to portray Zion Quinn to having. So all around I thought this was great and it kind of upped Wesley's stock. At least in my head anyway, up to his stock. And I think is going to kind of progress his story a little bit more now that he's kind of slayed one of the people that he's been trying to. I think there's also going to be something going on with him and Sanga. I don't know if it's going to be a mismatched, like big man, little man tag team. I kind of hope it's not. I want to see them both do their own singles thing, but I won't be super disappointed either, I guess, if they do put them together. But I am enjoying Wesley as a singles competitor. And I think they did a really good job selling Zion Quinn's offense and making him look like a little bit more of a killer. Bruce.
So Wesley's first match as a singles wrestler after all this stuff happened with MSK was against Zion Quinn, and he lost that match. And then in the backstage segment the next week, Zion Quinn interrupted and said something that no one understood, and Wesley called that out. He's like, what are you doing here? Like, what does that even mean? And so he's been to get at him for a couple weeks since then, and Zion Quinn's been injured, at least in the story he's been injured. And they've had Lee going on this journey against larger men who beat him basically by sheer strength, like the chokeslam from Sanga and how it just folded him up a couple weeks ago. Or last week. And when you think about the fact that this was Wesley's first win as a singles wrestler since he came back, it made sense to have it against Zion Quinn, and it made sense to have it in a roll-up just because I think not only with the promo in the back, but Wade Barrett during the match really emphasized how Wesley is still trying to find what it takes to be a singles wrestler. I think this is they're finally starting that that journey where I've been kind of advocating for in terms of having him go on a month-long losing streak, which obviously not happening anymore, but a month-long losing streak, and then finally figuring out what it is that makes it click for him to be a singles wrestler. And
Here, he won by roll-up, but he knows that's not going to be what it actually takes to become a singles star. So I like what they've been doing here. I do think that Wesley is someone I've been high on from, I mean, when he was with Impact as well. So it's just that when the MSK gimmick was just a lot. It was even more so than when the Rascals were in Impact. That was a lot to deal with too. So I'm glad that he's become more, not just serious, but a relatable star, a relatable wrestler in terms of us understanding what his motivations are, why he does what he does, how he goes about doing what he goes about doing. And then I think if they they keep traveling down this path, what they should do is have him go back on another losing streak and then actually win clean with definitively. And from there, start his journey back to maybe being a North American champion or an NXT champion. So I'm excited to see where this goes. Zion Quinn is going to be where he's at, but Wesley definitely has a lot of potential for the future. So earlier, I think Sean said something about, if he could pick two people, it would be Grayson Waller and Tiffany Stratton for the future. I mean, I also forgot about Carmelo Hayes and Wesley. So there's, in terms of looking at the future potential, which is what NXT 2.0 is now, there are several wrestlers down there who you could see as future world champions on Raw and SmackDown. So in that regard, they're doing well. It's just that for a lot of us, we have to recalibrate what it means to watch NXT now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think at this point, too, where we are, I don't know, God, what is it, 8-9 months in NXT 2.0? God, time flies. But where we were that far in NXT 2.0, stories have been developing. We've started to grow in, we started to know a lot of these characters. You've had people come and go, like A-Kid. I don't know what happened to him. He showed up for like a match, and then we haven't heard from him since. But I think we've kind of gotten in the groove of things. Where, you know, before, like, just the switch to NXT 2.0, a lot of stories just all of a sudden got nixed, and a lot of people we knew just got nixed, and you know, but now we're kind of getting there, and we've got, like, the show's been a rolling, if you will, and I think it makes it a much more watchable show now that we kind of have some investment in these people, especially if you've been watching the whole time, but now we have some investment in these people, and there are some stories that you can kind of sink your teeth into, rather than everything just kind of abruptly changing. And now there are just all these new faces and new stories. And it was effectively like just starting to watch a new show in a lot of ways. So, I think, you know, they've been doing a good job that way. All right, let's go next. Let's go next to Ivy Nile versus Kiana James. This was another short match, I believe about another 3 minutes or so, if I'm not mistaken. For what it was, I enjoyed it. It was a perfectly okay match, a little clunky, but I think both Ivy Nile and Kiana James, they've kind of got it. They definitely need some more work, again, developmental, whatever. But I kind of like what they're both bringing to the table so far. Ivy Nile, I mean, we've already kind of talked about her, you know, in the past and whatever, not necessarily tonight, just, you know, on prior shows. And I think we're all pretty high on Ivy Nile, and you know, the upsides that she has. I feel like her mic skills have certainly improved. They're not great, but they're definitely improved from where they were. I really liked, but the backstage segment that her and the two of them had, Kiana James and Ivy Nile had backstage, where Nile basically like just shoved James right up against the lockers, and kind of like, that was really intimidating. I think she did a great job at it. It came off pretty okay on TV. So like I said, you know, this match, they both went out, they gave it a good shot. Again, not like a 5-star match by any stretch, perfectly an okay match. Kiana James was, I kind of like this new like librarian gimmick she's got going on. I can't think of what Stacy Keebler's name in WCW was. I don't know if you remember off the top of my head. It's on the tip of my tongue. The tip of my tongue. It was Miss Something.
York is Kiana James's gimmick. That's right.
I got to Google it real quick. But she kind of reminds me of Stacey Keibler in Miss Hancock. That's what it was, Miss Hancock.
Right.
She kind of reminds me of that Miss Hancock type gimmick. You know, and it's been done since then as well, but it wasn't necessarily like a librarian or like a nerd, but just kind of like that, I guess in a way it was like a nerdy businesswoman was like what Miss Hancock was. I see a lot of similarities there. And I think it could certainly work for her. I know, you know, we were talking in our private chat on Skype, you know, earlier tonight, and I know you weren't super over the moon about her new attire. I didn't necessarily mind it. I was kind of indifferent on it. But I think it personally better than what she was wearing, which if memory serves was relatively generic. But yeah, you know, overall, I think I've talked more about this match than this match actually was, in the ring for. So Bruce, over to you.
I just thought Kiana James's attire looked very, very, WWE 2K22 creation suite. So
yeah,
that was just my thoughts. At first, when I saw someone stepping to Ivory Nile, I thought it was going to be Tatum Paxley because she had been the one who had been trying to join Diamond Mine by impressing Tatum Paxley at first.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought so. I didn't think it was her, but I was like, you know what? That's what they show me tonight. I'll roll with it.
So that was interesting. I also I must have missed something, and it could have been when I wasn't here on my birthday, but when did Kiana James become associated with Pretty Deadly?
I don't think she really has. I think that was just kind of like a tonight thing, but
she was just making fun of Ivy Nile to get her, yeah, to rile her up for some reason.
I kind of think that's what it was.
Because
at least in my head, I was thinking that I kind of forgot it was Tatum Paxley. I was thinking it was the same person that was trying to get in Diamond Mine before. Cause like I said, in my head, I wasn't remembering Tatum Paxley. I kind of figured where they were showing Kiana James, like talking about potentially getting, like, did you talk to the Creeds was one of the things she said. Mm-hmm. That was in my head. That was the story. So, I might have missed something too, actually, now that you say it, but it kind of just came off. Like, if that's the case, it kind of just came off like she was trying to just push Ivy Nile's buttons.
I don't know why anyone would want to try and push Ivy Nile's buttons, but that's for a different conversation. So I also thought in the backstage interaction, it was interesting how James came off so calm and cool when she got shoved into the lockers and just said basically the same. When Ivy Nile asked her what her numbers say about Nile kicking her ass, she said it's all the same as your boys being successful on Saturday. So that was a nice little comeback for her. I don't know if you want her to come off so cool against Ivy Nile, but the match, it was better than Jade versus Lopez, not by too much. There was still a bit of greenness you could see here. I'm going to put that more on James because of what we've seen out of Nile before. But yes, obviously they. I guess they're really trying to sow more dissension between, or within Diamond Mine, and trying to get the mind games going. Kiana James isn't someone that I look at as having too much potential. So I guess in that sense, she's good. Be the person to have as a stepping stone, more or less, for Ivy Nile to move into the future. But I'm not sure what we're supposed to think about Diamond Mine coming out of this episode unless we know what happens on Saturday.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking Diamond Mine in the next month is going to be no more, but that's just me. All right. So we're going to backtrack to Solo Sikoa versus Duke Hudson. So we've had Solo Sikoa is going to be going up against Cameron Grimes, going to be going up against the winner of Cameron Grimes versus Carmelo Hayes for the North American title this Saturday at In Your House. Solo Sikoa and Duke Hudson kind of got at it backstage a little bit. Duke Hudson was saying, well, hey, since I beat Bron Breakker last week, I should be next in line for the North American title. And, you know, Solo Sikoa was quick to point out, well, you won by DQ. So, you know, let's not get super cocky here. you know, which kind of turned into a little bit of a verbal argument and into a match, which is apparently how a lot of matches now start here in NXT 2.0. Now that there's like no authority figure, it's just like, hey, we got some beef. Let's go take it out in the ring. I don't know what else gets bumped off the card, but hey, whatever. So the match itself is probably as good as you think it's going to be with Solo Sikoa and Duke Hudson. Solo Sikoa is, in my opinion, I think he shines as the biggest star on the male roster right now in my head. Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes is right there. Carmelo Hayes is definitely right there. I might even say Carmelo Hayes might just inch him out a little bit, but Solo Sikoa is definitely right there. He's kind of already a complete package. Like I've said a few times now, I mean, the family genes were very nice to him. He's able to move around the ring and kind of, he has that ring psychology, that a lot of people in his family, you know, were very successful with. So, I think he's going to go pretty far in the company. This match in particular, it was a great match. Duke Hudson, I think he got more offense in than anybody else has gotten in on Solo Sikoa at this point. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and watch these other matches, but I feel like Duke Hudson got a lot of offense in here. And I don't want to see people get too much offense in on Solo Sikoa just yet, because I really want to see him get built as like a real threat. But he was a babyface. You do have to build sympathy on him here, especially if you're going to try to go for a decently long match. And I think this was one of the longer matches on the show, if I'm not mistaken. But also, too, you're trying to keep I'm just going to call him Roderick Strong. You're trying to keep Duke Hudson strong. Because he is a guy that you're also trying to build up. They're not trying to build him up as much as Sikoa or Grimes or Hayes, right? At this particular moment, but he's like kind of right behind them. So I think this was good to keep him strong. He definitely got some good offense in here. It keeps Duke Hudson strong, but also doesn't make Solo Sikoa look too weak, because he did get, he did get the win coming out of here tonight. That's kind of what people, I think, are really going to remember. So overall, I thought this is a good way to do it. Good match. Solo Sikoa, I think, is the right opponent here too. As we talked about a little while ago, during our opening segment tonight, talking about the main event, Sikoa versus Grimes looks like they're probably going to be, the next match, for the North American title. Carmelo Hayes could throw a wrench in that Saturday, but I do think Grimes is going to be coming out victorious there. So Solo Sikoa versus Duke Hudson, Bruce.
I noted that in the backstage segment to set this up. Sikoa's facial reactions were way over the top, but at least that means he's already at that point instead of you having to struggle to get him to that point. So at least that works in his favor. And it's amazing how when he does those facial reactions, he looks just like his twin brothers. It's ridiculous. The match with Hudson. So not only did Hudson get a lot of offense, but because of Hudson's size, and I've discussed this before on the show, it's believable offense with him because he towers over pretty much everyone not named Songer, yeah, Von Wagner at the men's roster. So I'm okay with the offense he's got.
He's like deceptively tall. Like, you don't think he's that tall, but he really is, yeah.
Yeah, and
he's
a bit lanky, so I think that plays into it in terms of the deceptiveness of his size. But because of that, I think it's okay that he did have this much offense on Solo Sikoa. It was a clean victory for Sikoa, so that's good. And again, what we're talking about is Zion Quinn, and we know where he slots in. At least right now, we know where both of these people slot in, because the backstage interview, Sikoa said, "So, if I can't beat you, then that means I'm not ready for the championship level, right?" And Hudson basically said, yeah, well, Sikoa won and Hudson lost, so I guess Sikoa is ready for championship level. So we have another a match that kind of set a defined hierarchy right now in terms of the men's division tonight. And so I think in that regard, that it was done well. Sikoa came off well. I do think it's going to be Sikoa versus Grimes after Saturday. What that means for Hayes, I hope that he moves on to Breakker and tries to make that the A championship, because – I noted that out of every match on the cards, even those that were added today, the only one that didn't have an in-ring segment
was the NXT Men's Championship, and usually that's the one that gets top billing. So because of that, I think that's an indication that there has been a bit of luster lost with Breakker as champion. And maybe that has more to do with Gacy than Breakker, but regardless, there is that issue. So I want them to do something to regain the luster to the NXT championship they had before.
I want them to do something to get back the luster for the women's championship. Wendy Chu, God. I can't believe that's our match going in your house. I feel like it's my fault, too, because the first time we saw Wendy Chu, I was like, I can't see her being a women's champion. And now there's a possibility we might, a small one, but there's a possibility we might. It's weird. I feel responsible some way. All right. And so those are all the matches. There were a bunch of segments here on the show that we didn't quite get to talk about, but we're already starting to push 2 hours here, and I don't quite want to hit that mark. So that said, was there anything in particular that you might want to talk about that we didn't already, Bruce?
We probably should discuss the Women's Championship Summit a little more, but it was also a bit of a weird segment. We kind of discussed it with Jane and whatnot, but
yeah.
I'll just say that this is the first time I saw Katana Chance and Kaden Carter actually show some fire and some personality behind their promos and their characters beyond more than just those fine girls that Brooks Jensen and Joshua Briggs are trying to get with. So that was nice. And I do think that Wendy Chu does have great comedic timing, but do you want that comedic character to be your women's champion? And because usually the answer is no, it's going to be really hard to buy any chance of her winning on Saturday when we watch that match, which takes away a bit of the anticipation and the excitement for the match.
Which is like exactly why in the back of my head, I'm kind of thinking that they might even pull the trigger on it, because like just for like a month or even like a week or something, you know, or maybe Mandy Rose wins it back next Tuesday. But,
yeah.
But like, I don't know. And granted, typical WWE booking, Wendy Chu got one over on Mandy Rose tonight means Mandy Rose is going to go over on Saturday. So I think that's probably the direction they're going to go. But, man, there's just something in the back of my head that's going, you know, I didn't think Wendy Chu would ever get here. So, of course, they're just going to put the title on her because they got to prove me wrong. Not that they're going to prove me wrong, but you know what I mean. Like, it just seems like I'm shocked that she got here in the first place. So, like, if she wins the title, I don't even know what to say. But like I said, or like you said, I think the fact that we're here at this match, Wendy Chu, very comedic wrestler. That's not really type of wrestler that you want to like be the face of your brand or at least your female division. So yeah, I don't think that she's going to wind up winning. The women's 6-man or 6-woman summit, kind of devolved into, as they always do. And of course, the catalyst that actually started the brawl, the inevitable brawl at a contract signing, the catalyst was a spitball from Wendy Chu. That's not something I'd ever thought I'd be reporting on here on this show, but hey, a spitball was what did it. I also agree with you on especially Kaden Carter. Both Casey, I can't call her Katana Chance. Both Casey Catanzaro and Kaden Carter did a great job on the mic tonight. Probably one of their better nights, if not their best night on the mic. Kaden Carter in particular, I really just felt like she was just this like fired up, like sassy chick that just wanted to go at Toxic Attraction. That's the kind of the gimmick that she's playing. That's what came off. And I felt like it was super authentic, especially for her. I haven't really seen that level of I don't want to say give a shit, but that level of mic work from her. Big props to both of them tonight. That's kind of touching on that. There's definitely a few other segments that we didn't talk about, such as the two families meeting, the Santa.
Chase,
Oh, Chase U. Yeah, Thea Hale joining Chase University. You know, how did we not see that coming?
Exactly. I was mad at myself for not seeing that coming.
Yeah, I wrote that in the hits and misses. I was like, how did I not see that? Actually, no, I didn't write that in the hits and misses. I wrote that in my notes here. I guess see that right now. How did I not see that coming? Should have saw that one, but didn't. And I'm kind of a little disappointed for that, I think, because I think I would have rather see Thea Hale in the women's division, not necessarily like kind of joining up with Chase University and kind of being part of their shtick. But by the same token, maybe that's a good place to put her to kind of get her feet wet in the industry to start, kind of put her with a group rather than have her be on her own so she can learn and absorb from them and things like that, even though they're still new with, you know, in and of themselves, but still kind of you're able to learn if you're in a group a little bit better, at least in my opinion anyway, than just being on your own. With Legado del Fantasma and The Family, with Tony D'Angelo, Two Dimes, and what is it, Stacks? Stacks and Two Dimes, yeah. They're going to have a six-man tag at In Your House. Whoever loses will join the other family, which that's a stipulation I did not see coming either. I kind of figured, you know, one of them would get kicked out of NXT, that being Legado del Fantasma, and then getting called up to the main roster. That's kind of what I was thinking here. But instead, I definitely just inhaled my own saliva. I'm sorry about that. All right. Yeah, but it's not something I saw coming. I did not think that they would, you know, join the other – one would join the other faction. And that still may not happen because, you know, let's say just for sake of argument, Tony D'Angelo and his group winds up going over. Well, Santos Escobar might just be too proud to actually bow down to them and just might try to kick the shit out of them. So, you know, we may not even see that, but I think that probably is the way it's going to necessarily go. One, you know, not necessarily – in that order with D'Angelo going over Legado. But I think one's definitely going to go over the other, and we will see kind of them trying to coexist together, which could be kind of scary for the NXT environment. Because so let's say they actually do all get together. Now we've got like this super faction of mobsters. That could actually be kind of scary for NXT. Like, I don't want to say like NWO levels of like terror, but if you even could call it terror, but you know, there's definitely some potential there. If they do wind up kind of forming one big faction that are cohesive and they can kind of get, you know, work together. So anything on Legado and The Family?
The only thing I'll add to what you said is I at least appreciate WWE taking the chances with how these interactions have played out over the past however long it's been. It's not just been typical backstage in the locker room or with Mackenzie Mitchell or in the ring. They really tried to switch it up a little bit and add a bit of flair to their presentation. So good for them on that.
All right. And like I said, there's still definitely some stuff we haven't talked about on this show. However, if you want us to talk about it, feel free to shoot us an email, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we could either cover it on Saturday or for the In Your House post show, or we'll cover it next week on Tuesday for this show. But I'm going to wrap things up here so we're not here all night long. I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. Again, I write the NXT hits and misses, which are up on pwtorch.com for tonight for you guys to check out. Also, check out my other side project, Deeges and Dragons. You can find us over at YouTube, channel named Deege Time, DEGETAME, where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I cover NXT every Tuesday. Well, we'll be rotating every Tuesday. I will be covering the show on Saturday, so you can find my report there as well. Find me on Twitter at B_Lee. Last thing I'll say, Giovanni Vinci is probably Fabian Aichner.
Okay, maybe. And the last thing I'm going to say is, Bruce, I can't believe you didn't acknowledge that Mandy Rose called Wade Barrett honey on live TV.
As Joseph said, no one heard it but him.
All right, guys, we will see you on, well, if you're VIP, we'll see you on Saturday. If not, we'll see you back here next week on Tuesday. Take care.